The midterm elections are nigh, and so are the tech policies that will be formed by the outcomes. This week on Techonomics, host Jason Middleton talks with an analyst and author from the American Enterprise Institute about where she sees tech policy shifting. That conversation starts now.
Hello and welcome back, and thanks for listening. The midterms are coming up, and the top-tier issues are always there: budget deficits, immigration, Me Too. But the second-tier issue of technology policy is a surprising area of bipartisanship, for the most part.
And the other one would be online privacy. I know California has its own bill, but it's an interesting case where California's actions have driven both parties together to try to optimize the privacy legislation for the whole United States. So it's actually it's a positive outcome and shows that the parties can work together. When you watch the media, you might never think that, but it actually does happen.
To help us unpack where the political parties agree and where they part ways, we have a researcher and author from the American Enterprise Institute. Here we go.
I'm Rosalind Layton, a visiting scholar at the American Enterprise Institute in Washington, D.C.
Rosalind, welcome back to the show, and thank you for your time. We had you on a couple of months ago to preview a paper you were working on about the midterm elections and tech policy and how that's going to play in, and that's been published. And first of all, I'd like to thank you for making me Google Alexander Hamilton's report on the subject of manufacturers that was published in 1791, so that was fun.
Absolutely. You know, we have a 230-year tradition of making tech policy in the United States. So, you know, we're not spring chickens at doing this.
That's right. We want to modernize the economy, keep pace with the times. As I say often on this show, regulation is always far behind innovation. But when regulation comes, it can be a bear. Let's talk about where the two parties seem to be in agreement. I mean, it's hard to find bipartisanship right now in the country, and especially at the highest levels.
Yeah, well, I was actually pleased to talk about it because, you know, tech policy is one of the areas where historically both parties have been aligned. Things like NASA, both parties love NASA. NASA got a wonderful boost, was reauthorized. Things like military R&D, about 1% of our GDP goes to the military, and looking at R&D to keep United States advanced vis-a-vis its adversaries. So that has actually, you know, gets a lot of support. The opioid crisis had a 98-1 approval in the Congress. So there are definitely some high areas. And the other one would be online privacy. I know California has its own bill, but it's an interesting case where California's actions have driven both parties together to try to optimize the privacy legislation for the whole United States. So it's actually it's a positive outcome and shows that the parties can work together. When you watch the media, you might never think that, but it actually does happen.
Just to put a little context around this, using your paper as my data point, globally, the tech industry topped $4.5 trillion in revenue in 2017, expected at $4.8 trillion this year. And the U.S. is the single largest tech market, as to your math as well. And I'm sure that there's nobody that would disagree with that.
Well, it's staggering. I mean, the United States accounts for 1/3 of the world's tech economy. It's a staggering figure. I mean, we had 34,000 startups last year alone. I mean, and that is year after year. And our tech industry keeps growing. There's 12 million people employed just in tech, and that doesn't count all the other people who use the internet and software and information technology in their jobs. So the other interesting thing is it's not just about Silicon Valley. I mean, a lot of other states have large tech industries and they're growing. And, you know, because of the internet and the dispersion, the diffusion of technologies, we have all sorts of internet companies growing around the United States. So that will also drive this conversation. It drives the policy. More and more people care about it. But it does matter, you know, what policies that we adopt, because we are in a global economy. And, you know, historically, the United States has set the tone. And, you know, we've lost some of the leadership over the last 20 years, and we need to get it back again. And part of that is getting parties on the same page.
Where did we lose some of our leadership gap? Is it GDPR coming out of the EU?
Well, you know, it happened before that. But what I will say is, you know, if we go back to 1996, it was really a high point. I mean, you know, we had President Clinton, Bill Clinton at that time, and there was a Republican Congress. And there was really the moment where, you know, the internet was being commercialized and things were getting going. And we had, you know, brilliant people launching things. And all sorts of technologies happening. And so that was an exciting time, and we rode that wave. And I would say that, it's like any industry. I mean, things get politicized, and different interests want to fight it out through the regulators and the courts and what have you. But I will say, all those things being considered, we're still leaders, but we now have challenges with things like data localization, different cybersecurity. We have challenges with other nations who resent, our success, or they want to, harm us, or whatever the case may be. And part of it was a lot of countries really appreciate that the United States set the tone, because they would rather take their cues from the U.S. and not China, not Russia, not Iran. And, we kind of ceded that leadership in the last few years, and you got to build it up again. And the good news is that the people in Congress get it. I've testified twice this year in Congress, and I was so pleased to see, both sides of the aisle. They're concerned about this. They want to do something about it. And so it's very positive.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that, because I have to say, the first time Mark Zuckerberg went up to the Capitol Hill to testify, Orrin Hatch didn't understand that advertising was the basis and business model of Facebook. So I'm glad those questions have gotten a little bit better since then. Right. My format's going to keep us kind of tight, but I really need to know from you, what is teed up tech policy-wise for the midterm elections? What is at stake? What's your priority here?
Right. Well, so I think not necessarily for this midterm, because it's not like we have tech policy issues on the ballot in any state, because even though the midterms will happen in November, the Congress will run through December, and they'll still do some things in December. So I'm optimistic that we will have some kind of a privacy bill or something out of the Congress before January 3rd, 2019. And I'm very excited about that, because we have, 330 million people, 50 states, and we can't have 50 sets of privacy rules. We need to have, a common standard.
Right.
So that actually is on track. And and the other part is that the policy process has been really the way it should be. It's been evidence-based. It has brought in the stakeholders from the civil society, from industry, from the regulatory side, the advocacy side. Everybody is getting a chance to participate, and that's really important. And they're taking the time it needs to take. It's a win-win. It looks good for both parties. It's not like, both Democrats and Republicans care about privacy, and mm-hmm. all Americans care about it.
You and I exchange some friendly fire on Twitter sometimes about net neutrality always, of course, but it is good, because we do land on one commonality for sure, and that is one ring to rule them all when it comes to net neutrality. So what's at stake with California's net neutrality law that passed via Scott Wiener in the California Senate, as opposed to at the federal level? Can you help us unpack that?
Right. I'm going to try to do it in a simple way, because, I'm so pleased it is something that we both care about. And this is, if we want to take our cues with the 50 nations of the world who have net neutrality laws and who've had them for a long time, the only way you can do it is you have to make a law in the Congress through the will of the people. You have to state what neutrality is. You have to state what you want to achieve and who is in charge to deliver it. And the bill, for example, the FCC open internet order, it doesn't even say net neutrality in it, okay? So if we want to do this right, that's the way that we have to do it. What California has done is going to be overturned in the courts as soon as that case gets there. And I've read the DOJ case. They have about 5 or 6 or 10 reasons why what California has done is illegal, and it has to do with the fact that communications policy is set at the federal level, because we have a national policy to ensure that everybody can use the internet. And the state of California cannot regulate data that comes from other places, whether it's other countries or other states. So unfortunately or fortunately, that rule is going to get turned down. It upsets me, because Californians deserve better. The politicians should not be making fake policy. They should be driving this issue to the Congress, putting it on the issue there at mm-hmm. the Congress, and getting it done. In fact, Henry Waxman from your wonderful state 10 years ago was ready to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what happened was there was too much money involved, that there was a gravy train of donations or campaign contributions to keep this issue alive rather than solve it once and for all. We could have done it 10 years ago and wouldn't still be having this debate.
Some would argue that legislating this at the FCC or federal level through Congress, that is, would regulate it kind of like a utility. Is that the way to go forward, or is that a faulty argument?
But it doesn't have to be a utility. I mean, again, you can Congress is the will of the people. We can decide how we, the people, decide how it's to be regulated. We can choose the FCC, the FTC, the Department of Justice. We can choose where it's regulated. Now, the problem of the way that it's been done to date was that, you know, policy entrepreneurs who are very clever, they figured out rules that were made in the 1930s, well, let's somehow shoehorn them for our internet today. That is not the best way to go, because it doesn't reflect what the internet is, what is in our society. You know, it doesn't bulletproof the law, the regulation. And that's why it's been so easy. It's been in court, you know, so many times, and it will keep being, you know, fought in court, because there's a whole industry around litigation. If we want to bulletproof a law, we have to make it through Congress, and that also protects it from the courts as well. And our Constitution has laid this out. When we, the people, decide that we want to regulate something, especially on a federal level, we need to go back to our Congress and set it up in that way. The FCC, as wonderful as it is, it's not allowed to say, well, we're going to decide what we get to regulate. They have to take their direction from Congress.
All right. Well, I appreciate that your voice is on Capitol Hill spreading this, because I'm hoping they're listening as well. Also, I have to say that there's another area of friendly fire. You just said the FCC, as wonderful as it is, I cannot get there. I just cannot get from here to there, Rosalind. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I mean, I'm looking on the bright side.
Rosalind Layton, thank you so much. She's a solid follow on Twitter, at Rosalind Layton. There are links online at KGORadio.com in the show notes there. You can find all of her stuff, including her new paper that just got dropped. Rosalind, enjoy Copenhagen, and thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you, Jason. Have a great day.
That's Dr. Rosalind Layton. She's a contributor and visiting academic at the American Enterprise Institute. For a link to her new research paper about tech policy and politics, please check the show notes for this week. It's at KGORadio.com. There's also a link to that Alexander Hamilton research paper from 1791 that she references there, too. We are online at other places at Facebook.com/Techonomics Radio, and I'm on Twitter at KGO Jason. For executive producer Jack Swanson, I'm the host and the writer, Jason Middleton. This has been Techonomics. Have great weeks, everybody.